You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
I'm your big daddy, and I want to be referred to as such.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
It's not fair.
I'm an Andrew Gunling fan.
Just take the L.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's Andrew Gunling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
That's right. Andrew Gunling in for Peter Rosenberg here tonight on ENN. Another very, very warm day here in New York City. Tonight's ENN on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Don, what's up? How are you?
I'm a walking, talking, breathing, eating moron. I can barely function. Just ask my wife.
And Chris Canty, how are you?
I'm going to cuddle the creamsicle.
Oh, I remember that. That was such a great segment. That was last week.
I think I would have married the creamsicle. I think the creamsicle is an absolute delight. And I think the ice cream sandwich is garbage.
Oh my God, no.
Whoa, that's so disrespectful.
Well, you know what? Because first of all, it's a mess. It's because it's not even a cookie. It's soft. Your fingers are all filled with the cookie the second you touch it, and it's just vanilla ice cream. And I love vanilla ice cream, but it leaves me wanting more. It's like a dessert appetizer.
The ice cream cookie is different than the ice cream sandwich.
No, the cookie sandwich, I'm telling you, I'm trashing that. I'm marrying the creamsicle. And what was the other one? The Chipwich? Oh, come on. It's not even a the Chipwich I cuddle. The ice cream sandwich can't hold a candle to the creamsicle and the Chipwich. I wanted to call in during that segment. I was so upset.
No, I want to end the conversation now because you're being disrespectful. There's no way you can trash the ice cream sandwich. It is a staple when it comes to desserts, especially when you're running up to the ice cream truck. How dare you?
What a waste of money. Might as well just throw the money underneath the truck. All the things you can get at the ice cream truck, you get an ice cream sandwich.
I can't believe you're saying this right now. I don't even know who I'm talking to.
Well, you know, you're talking to a guy somebody that
I considered you somewhat of a food connoisseur, but now I just know that I can't even put you in that category.
It's so basic. It's plain.
But that's the beauty of it.
Like they didn't even try. They didn't even try. Absolute garbage. I'm walking by it. If I'm dying for ice cream, I'm walking by it. When I was a kid, my mom would load up the ice cream sandwiches in the freezer. I'd be like, Ma, why don't you go to the store? Get something good.
Mom, Michael wants you to make an appearance on the show. Mom.
Disgusted.
I'm going to cuddle the creamsicle. By yourself, brother. There's no way I would trash the ice cream sandwich. I think the ice cream sandwich and the orange creamsicle, those are just two staples from the ice cream truck. I don't know how you could trash them.
I think I would have married the creamsicle.
So, Chris, that means you trash the Chipwich?
Yeah, I mean, out that's of the three, out, if you're talking out. About oh, the three, I'm trashing the Chipwich, yes.
First of all, I know there's ENN, but this is important because it's 1,000 degrees outside and people are loving this, okay?
Yeah.
Basically, a Chipwich is an upgraded, a bionic ice cream sandwich because it's an actual cookie. And not the garbage that the ice cream sandwich has, and it's got legit ice cream with chips in it. So why would you choose an ice cream sandwich over the Chipwich? It's an upgrade.
Because, Don, I got to wait a half hour for the Chipwich to unthaw to the point where I can eat it. The ice cream sandwich is only going to take me 5 minutes. What are you talking about? You know better.
Worth the wait. It's worth the wait.
No.
Andrew, also, no. Don is 100% right. The Chipwich is a level up. Certainly from an ice cream sandwich. And that is, if it's a hot day out, you're not waiting a half an hour for that thing to thaw. You're waiting 30 seconds and it's ready to go. And the cookie quality in the Chipwich is solid. It's a standalone as a cookie, let alone ice cream sandwich. So
listen, Andrew,
that would be my number one.
Andrew, I don't know how much stock I can put in your opinion. You're a 180 soaking wet, man. You don't know good food. You're not with the 300-pound guys. Stop it.
No, he listen. This guy eats octopus, man. He's got range when it comes to food. Seriously, he is the anti Michael
K. I'm not taking Andrew Gunling's word for what are the best treats off the ice cream truck. I'm sorry.
Creamsicle gone.
But if you're looking at those two things as cars, right? The ice cream sandwich is a Pinto. The Chipwich is a Ferrari. Because they're both fundamentally sandwich. They're both ice cream sandwiches. One is unbelievable, and the other one is as generic as possible.
Well, Dave. I'm about to say, Dave. This is how discombobulated we've got to be, Don. I'm arguing at you like you're Dave Rothenberg now. Listen, Don. I hear what you're saying on the Chipwich. To me, the Chipwich is doing way too much. It's doing way too much. Are you a cookie? Are you ice cream? We don't know what the Chipwich is. With the ice cream sandwich, I just feel like it's so simple, delicious.
Now I know why you're not married, because that's the way you probably are. It's like, what are you going to be smart and hot? Why don't you pick one, for God's sake? Whoever thought of it, there's too much going on. That's exactly why it's great.
It's too much going on, Don. Too much going on.
I've never heard such an opinion.
No, the Chipwich is perfect. It's a perfect food, and it would be my number one. It'd be my Mary for sure. Here we go.
You guys are confused. You guys are lost.
Well, I'm sorry. That's how I feel. ENN, here we go. Looks like we could be in for preseason football without preseason games. The NFL offered the NFLPA on Monday to play no preseason games this summer, a source told Adam Schefter. The players have been pushing not to play any preseason games due to the coronavirus pandemic. The league's latest proposal also includes an offer for a longer training camp acclimation period, closer to what the union had proposed. And the NFLPA has not yet confirmed to the league whether it will accept the proposal. Although, why, if these are the things that they wanted, can anybody think of a reason why they would not accept this?
No. But you never know.
Well, no, I can't think of any reason why they wouldn't accept it on its face, but I will say that the NFLPA is also asking for the ITER plan for all 32 teams, and to my knowledge, they only have one right now from the Kansas City Chiefs, so that's a part of this that has to get worked out as well. The ITER is the Infectious Disease Emergency Response Plan, and that's something that, again, we talked about with the priority being the health and safety of the players as we get ready to have all these guys at training camp. What happens when you have to deal with one of these guys being infected with the coronavirus? You absolutely have to have a plan, and the players need to know what that plan is just so they can feel comfortable with putting themselves in those environments.
Yeah. In their latest update, this actually just came down a short while ago. In the latest update on COVID-19 testing results, the NFLPA said that 95 players in the league have known positive tests. Although I saw another update saying that I believe that does not include players that currently have it right now.
Well, that's not surprising, because we saw the spike in all the other sports as well when guys were coming back from wherever they were, right? When the NBA, NHL, right? When they first started getting guys in the bubble, a bunch of guys were testing positive because they were coming back from God knows where, not just in the United States, but all over the world. Same with the NHL. The NHL had said at one point 56% of their players were somewhere other than the city they play in, and 17% were overseas. I'm sure that's similar numbers to the NBA. Now, football, not overseas, but certainly around the country, right, Chris? So I'm not surprised that you saw a lot of positive tests when guys were reporting. And now the question is, once they get back into their home states and start focusing on training, that's going to stop.
Yeah, well, you hope that stops. You hope they're able to contain it, because, listen, inevitably guys are going to get it. It's just a matter of having a plan, being able to isolate those guys so they don't infect the rest of the team.
Let's see. Staying with football for a sec, one of the better pass rushers of the last decade is calling it a career. I almost feel bad saying just a pass rusher, because he was a pretty good run stopper too. Michael Bennett, who, of course, won a Super Bowl with the Seahawks and also played for the Bucks, Eagles, Patriots, and Cowboys. He announced his decision on Instagram. Three-time Pro Bowl selection, has 69.5 career sacks, spent 11 seasons in the league. Bennett told The New Yorker that in addition to spending more time with his family, he wants to help athletes be heard when it comes to social and racial injustice. So Michael Bennett calling it a career. Really good player.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, got to tip my cap to Michael Bennett, man. He's been one of those guys that not only does – does work in the communities, but also does a lot of work with the NFLPA and always trying to advocate for players and be an ally and trying to teach the younger generation of NFL players coming up the right things and the right way to do it. And so just nothing but respect for him. I played with his brother Marty B in Dallas and in New York, so I know him pretty well. And just, he was an awesome player, but he's an even better guy.
So, yeah, good career for Michael Bennett. Let's see. The three finalists were announced today for the NHL's MVP award, the Hart Trophy. Leon Draisaitl of the Oilers, Nathan MacKinnon of the Avalanche, and Artemi Panarin of your New York Rangers. Draisaitl led the league in points. MacKinnon had 43 more points than the next closest member of his team, so it shows how important he is to Colorado. And Panarin was the best even strength scorer of anyone in the NHL this season, 71 points at even strength. Does Panarin have a chance here?
It's going to be tough because, as you said, MacKinnon is so much the Avalanche. And the Avalanche are a very, very good team. But for him to have that many more points than anybody else, and injuries have had a lot to do with that in Colorado, because I think there are several players that would have been a little bit closer. Panarin's got Zibanejad. They played a lot on the power play together, played together at times. And, of course, Draisaitl plays with McDavid, one of, if not the best players in the league. So that explains a lot of his points. So I think it'll be MacKinnon, but Panarin is just really in a city and for a team in particular that is littered with bad free agent signings. I mean, he's going to be right up there, Andrew, as one of the great free agent signings, not just for the Rangers, but in New York, period. I mean, this guy is still young. And he is just an absolutely terrific player, great kid. So I know a lot of people were kind of critical that the Rangers, they seemed like the break from their plan. It looked like, oh, they're diving back into free agency again. This one made perfect sense. He is a perfect fit for this team.
And Don, correct me if I'm wrong, but Panarin left money on the table. He could have gotten elsewhere to decide to be a part of the Rangers, right?
Yeah, the Islanders offered more money, but he wanted to be a Ranger. Maybe some of that had to do with John Davidson, who he knew in Columbus. Part of it's the original six, Chris, really resonates with hockey players. And maybe that needs to get brought up when we say, well, why don't they want to play for the Knicks, but they want to play for the Rangers? If you're a hockey player, even someone from Russia or overseas, being a Ranger, a Blackhawk, a Canadian, a Maple Leaf, a Red Wing, and a Bruin, it really just resonates with a lot of players as a place to be. And, yeah, he wanted to be a Ranger bad, and boy, the Rangers really wanted him, and it's been a perfect marriage.
Guys, when the NBA resumes, the Utah Jazz have announced how they're going to honor the passing of Jerry Sloan, unquestionably the greatest coach in Jazz history. They're going to have a 1-2-2-3 black tribute patch signifying his total victories as a head coach with the Jazz. It'll be worn starting with their first scrimmage this Thursday against Phoenix. Sloan is one of only two coaches to win at least 1,000 games with one NBA team. Can you name the other one?
1,000 games with one team.
1,000 wins.
1,000 wins, okay.
Well, I would think...
Tell me if you want a hint.
Yeah, I'll take a hint.
He is active. He's current.
So who's been with one... Popovich.
There you go.
Right.
He's been with them since early mid 90s.
Yeah.
So yeah.
George Gervin was on the team when he started coaching.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Speaking of NBA coaches, do you guys know who Daniel Gafford is?
I do not.
No.
Okay. He's a second-round pick, rookie center for the Chicago Bulls. He started just 7 games this year, averaging just 5 a game, spent some time down in the G League. So that's who he is. He was on a Twitch stream when he was asked about current Bulls coach Jim Boylan and whether or not he likes him. Here's what Gafford said.
Do you like Jim Boylan? Yeah, I don't like him a lot, but he okay. Got some things he can work on, things he can get better at. As a person and as a coach, I'm not going to hate on him. I'm not going to hate the man, but,
I don't like him a lot. He's got some things he can work on. This from a rookie second-round pick who has started 7 games and has spent some time in the G League.
As a coach and a person.
But then says, I'm not going to hate on him, though. Well, you kind of are.
Yeah,
yeah, they must have had a few
conversations. With all due respects, and then you just eviscerate the guy.
Oh, my God.
Gee, I mean, that's a bold move from a rookie averaging 5 a game. Boylan's gone just 39-84 since taking over, so it's not like he's had a ton of success. And he is notoriously disliked by his players. But I'm curious, Chris. Like, let's say a little bit of a different scenario. Because obviously Tom Coughlin won a Super Bowl, so there was immediate respect there. But like, how would it go over if a 6th-round rookie would have come out and said something like that, like critical of Tom Coughlin when you were there?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't have gone over well. The only thing I can think of is that if a rookie has the audacity to say something like that, he's not saying something that other veteran players in that locker room aren't saying as well. So to me, it feels like he's just kind of falling in line. It's just that he's so naive. He's willing to go out there and voice it publicly, not knowing what that would do for his career. But, I mean, I can't believe that he's the only guy in that locker room that has that opinion about that coach.
See, Larry Brooks had an article, and it made perfect sense to me. He says that basketball's a player's league. Hockey's an owner's league. Football's a coach's league. And he's so right. Like, coaches have so much power in the NFL that that would not go over well unless you were really a superstar on a football team. But a basketball team, like you said, Chris, if he's got the backing of his teammates, what's coach going to do?
Nothing,
especially a coach with a losing record like that. You got, like, no shot. But it would probably take, like, a Michael – like it did. It took, like, a Michael Strahan to, like, get movement from Coughlin, right? A future Hall of Famer. Like, that's the level it would take. But in the NBA, probably not as we've seen, certainly not somebody of that significance.
Yeah, famous coach killers. Magic Johnson, LeBron James, Daniel Gafford. Right there with them.
Right. Who doesn't belong and why?
Right. Let's see, guys. Announcements continue to come down regarding fans and sporting events this fall. This one specific to New York. Colleges and universities in New York can play football and other sports this fall, but they will have to do so without fans in the stands because of the coronavirus pandemic. This according to an order from Governor Andrew Cuomo on Tuesday. Fanless, he said. The game can go on. The game can be televised, but no fans. That was during a teleconference with reporters. The order would affect FBS members like Army, Buffalo, and Syracuse, as well as a handful of FCS programs if their seasons do wind up getting played. It wasn't immediately clear if Cuomo's order would also affect college basketball games and holiday tournaments, because there's a bunch in New York. Obviously, the 2K Empire Classic is at Madison Square Garden in November. The Legends Classic is at the Barclays Center in November. But right now, it seems like this is pertaining to football. Not a surprise.
No, but here's the thing, Andrew. How do some of these schools support themselves by playing with no fans? Because I don't know what kind of contract Army has with, like, radio and television. It's probably not very much. If anything, it's probably a barter system, right? With spots. Like, can Army football survive and not having anybody in the stadium and then being able to share the revenue for their road games with no television or radio money coming in?
You're right. I mean, I look at Syracuse, and, you know, they're refurbishing the Carrier Dome, which I'm sure is costing a fortune. They probably didn't realize that they would be doing it in the midst of a pandemic where they can't make some of that money back immediately by selling out football and basketball games.
But their television, but the television contract with their...
conference. With the ACC network, right. Yes.
That's going to help them. Rutgers, the same thing, because they get to play the Big Ten television contract that they have that's going to keep those teams afloat. But they'll still hurt. For Nebraska to play in front of nobody, you know, for Rutgers to play in front of nobody, but for Army, what conference is even Army in? I don't remember. There's no television. Is there any kind of television contract, Chris, for, like, Army? Like, I know their games are on radio, but
I'm sure there is. I'm sure they've got to have a television contract there.
But it's not like it being playing.
No,
in a big
it's not
conference.
Like the power. It's not like the Power Five conferences. No,
right.
But I guess. It also brings into question, whether or not these schools, these colleges should actually have these athletes participating in fall sports. Like, just because you've gotten the approval from the governor, is that something that you should engage in? You know, can you justify that?
Well, yeah. Can you justify allowing a football or basketball team to be on campus when students are allowed on campus?
Exactly.
Yeah. And look, obviously these decisions are being made in the name of public health, but you're right. The financial impact is significant. Listen to this. With the ACC, Big 12, and SEC waiting until next week to make a decision about their respective season schedules, three prominent Chick-fil-A kickoff games remain in limbo. So if those three conferences follow the Big Ten and the Pac-12's lead and go into conference-only play due to the pandemic, then Florida State, West Virginia, Georgia versus Virginia, and Auburn, North Carolina, those games that are set for weeks 1 and 2 in Atlanta, would be canceled. And that loss, according to the Peach Bowl CEO Gary Stokin, financially, that loss is estimated at $100 million in economic impact, which is... That's an unbelievable amount. Yeah. Just from three games being canceled. So,
well, can't they, like we're talking about the NFL changing the schedule, can they play later? Can they move it to the spring?
I'm sure they're talking about that. That's got to be on the table. Because it's an incredible, the financial impact is significant, and health obviously trumps everything. But, it's not just like a footnote. It's an important element of this. Let's see, guys. One note for Knicks fans, by the way, the NBA draft lottery has been moved up from August 25th to August 20th. So Knicks fans everywhere, update your calendars for that. Also, reporters who are in the NBA bubble were given a tour today of what things are going to look like at the game site. The court itself features Black Lives Matter written on the floor in large, glossy black print. Game broadcasters are going to be in an enclosed plexiglass paneled enclosure, kind of creating separation between them and the players, while team benches now feature dozens of spaced out folding chairs, each measured to be 6 feet away from the next. Boy, that's going to look strange on TV. Mark Spears of ESPN is in the bubble. He was on Bart and Han earlier today and describes the bubble as being very safe.
Everywhere we go, there's Clorox wipes. I can't find no Clorox wipes at home.
You can't buy them anywhere.
Yeah, so they gave me like 20 masks. There's Clorox wipes. There's people yelling at you. Like, everybody has to wear a mask. It's not any... they don't care about your rights or whatever. Here, you need to wear a mask, and you're wearing a mask. So, yes, I do think it's extremely the safest environment that you could possibly be in, unless you just stand in your sterile house and having your food delivered every day. There's little things you could fix here and there, but the fact that we're getting tested daily and I'm getting the results the next day, like I'm getting friends in Oakland being tested and they find out 18 days later. I'm getting my results every day. So even if something were to come up, there's a hospital on the premises. They have a means to, like, quarantine it, to stop it, that, you know, knock on wood, that I hope resumes through the whole time. I don't want to leave.
I'm not surprised. I'm trying to get information. I don't think the NHL is allowing anybody media-wise in. I think they might allow announcers for the conference final and the final for NBC. But I don't think there's any there's not going to be any broadcasters locally. I don't know if there's any media there. Isn't that the better way to do it? Why would you add a level of people into the bubble?
Well, I hear what you're saying, but like listening to that, it's hard to hear what Mark Spears said there and think, "Oh, this isn't going to work." Like that sound, like I hear that and it sounds like this is about as airtight as you could get. I expect this. If it's what he's describing, then this to me should work. I think that that this is going to work for the NBA.
Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that, you know, the more people, like the less people, the easier it is to deal with, right?
Yeah.
Like why allow more people in that's necessary? I was just looking like from the NHL, they were saying they're talking like $50-70 million they've invested in these bubbles. You know, so that's less people to feed, less masks to wear. So I mean, it's great that the media is allowed in there. It's going to be great for the coverage and all that. But you hear what I'm saying, Chris? Like, wouldn't you try to minimize as much as humanly possible, especially with where you can have press conferences through Zoom? It's not ideal, but wouldn't you understand it if the media wasn't allowed in the bubble?
No, I would completely understand it. And I guess I wonder how much of this is from the players wanting to have media and outlets available on the premises so they can promote their agenda, so they can continue to advocate for equal rights and advocate against police brutality. You know, I wonder how much of that is being driven by the players, how much of the media presence is a concession from the NBA and Adam Silver for something that the players obviously wanted.
Yeah, and I also – I don't know, Don, exactly. I'd have to look it up. I don't know how many media members are there. I don't know if there are beat reporters for teams that are there or if it's more national media. I'd have to look and see. I mean, it's certainly not going to be like covering a regular game when there's, like an entire media section. So I don't think it'll be like that. And then last but not least, guys, ESPN has kind of been going through their MLB season preview, and today they released all of their – predictions in terms of teams who are going to win divisions, World Series, MVP, Cy Youngs, all that stuff. I'll run through it quickly if you want to guess for any of these. They polled 32 of their MLB experts, so analysts, writers, editors, researchers, all those people who work in MLB, in the MLB department. American League East champion with 21 votes. Yes, the Yankees. Yep, the Rays got the other 11 votes. Some of these I'll go through quickly. AL Central was the Twins with 24 votes out of the 32. AL West,
Astros. I guess.
Yep, Astros got 17 votes. A's got 11. Angels got 4. Then the National League East.
Braves.
Yeah, Braves. Yep. Oh, No. Really? Oh. Okay, because I'll
it was.
Okay, still the Braves, okay.
This one was close, though. The Braves had 16 of the 32 votes. Then the Nationals had 10. Mets got 4. Mm-hmm. Phillies got 2. Marlins had none. NL Central, the Reds got 14 votes. Mm-hmm. Then the Brewers. It went Reds, Brewers, and Cubs. Okay. Then were tied for second. And then Cardinals rounded out with 5 votes. National League West.
I think the Dodgers, and I would be surprised if it wasn't all 32.
They were the only one who received unanimous, all 32 votes. American League champion.
Yankees.
Yep, it was. Yankees. And then the Rays were second. National League champion.
Dodgers.
That was Dodgers, 24 out of the 32 votes. Then Braves, Nationals, and Brewers each got 2 votes. World Series champion prediction.
Dodgers.
Yankees.
Dodgers, 18 votes. Yankees only got 6. I was a little surprised with that. Thought they would have gotten a little bit more.
Yeah, my fandom wasn't going to let me pick the Dodgers.
I think baseball will be very happy with that World Series, a Yankees-Dodgers matchup.
Yeah, they haven't had that since 81. They had it routinely for a while, 77, 78, 81, and then going back to when they were in Brooklyn. Forget, it was like a rite of passage. Wasn't a World Series unless the Dodgers were playing the Yankees.
And then the last couple here, American League MVP.
Well, since they have the Yankees, I guess they'll probably go Judge or Glaber.
I would probably say Glaber Torres.
Come on, guys. It's a rule that Mike Trout has to win AL MVP.
I got caught up in actually, teams competing for something.
Great point, yeah.
I'm sorry. When I think of it, most valuable player, I'm not thinking about teams that are 10 games under 500.
You know, Don, that war is the only thing that matters?
I know. War. What is it good for? The MVP.
Yep. By the way, though, I should tell you, Glaber got 3 votes. Aaron Judge did get 1. So at least they were represented. Okay.
I wasn't thinking. So.
Right. National League MVP?
Oh, because.
Is it Bellinger? Yelich?
Yeah. Why not Bellinger, right?
Yeah.
Ronald Acuna Jr., 9 votes. It was pretty spread out. Mookie Betts got 6. Yelich got 5. By the way, Pete Alonso did get 1 vote, so he was represented for the Mets. And then the last two here, American League Cy Young.
That would be Garrett Cole.
Yep, in a runaway, 20 votes. Shane Bieber was second with just 3. And National League Cy Young. This one was close all the way through.
DeGrom?
He was third.
DeGrom was third.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Who would the Dodger be? They wouldn't have Kershaw.
No, I can't imagine that would be.
I don't know. It's been a while since they played baseball.
Strasburg was represented, but he was not. Scherzer was second, and you guys were right. It is a Dodger, and it's not Clayton Kershaw. It's Walker Buehler who they're predicting to win National League.
Buehler kind of fell through the cracks because it's been so long since I've watched baseball. Like there's some names that just aren't like sticking to me. But yeah, he was very good.
He was fantastic last year. So those are your MLB predictions from ESPN.com, and that is ENN for tonight.
More. Doesn't he do a good job, Chris? Seriously, you've heard Peter. Andrew's better, right?
Yeah, Gundy did an outstanding job with ENN.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.